But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with the mystery of why Arizona is paying taxes without representation. Move on to all the literal destruction happening in D.C. and follow all of that up with an update to our ongoing docuseries, Tariffs Are Bad, According to Ronald Reagan. Let's begin, shall we? Once upon an October 18th, 7 million people across the whole fucking globe protested the pumpkin-shaped Fuhrer ruining the United States. People showed up here in the land of the fighting for our lives, and also Italy, England, Germany, Ireland, France, Canada, just to name a few. Not to mention the international news coverage showing millions of people protesting peacefully, something the Republicans swore up and down would never happen. Which makes the whole No Kings protest a waste of time, according to the Trump regime and friends, because the United States clearly doesn't have a king.
They're referring to me as a king. I'm not a king.
Right. He's not acting like a king.
If he was a king, he probably would have never left the office the first time.
Trump's no king. If Trump was a king, you wouldn't have had a rally.
If President Trump was a king, he would have closed the national parks and the National Mall, so they couldn't have had the rally out here.
A few moments later.
I feel that this president, for once, has sort of taken up the space of the executive authority. And rather than being tepid and timid in the way of executing the mandate of the American people and the will, he's actually showing us what that authority looks like.
Damn it, generic female Fox host. Why did you have to go and fuck up the narrative? Didn't you hear Cheeto Benito, Brian Kiss My Ass Mead, Cocaine Junior, and Bootlicker Johnson all repeating the lie that the Danger Yam isn't trying to be the first gourd to rule over the shining city on a hill?
You mean shining.
Shh! You want to get sued?
Not that the mixed signals from elderly Julius's late-night posts from the classified documents closet at Mar-a-Lago are helping, if we're being totally honest. I'm talking about that AI video of Gummer Don wearing a crown while flying a fighter jet to Kenny Loggins' danger zone while dumping shit all over the No Kings protesters. Something the most frustrated Johnson to ever speak for the House of Reps was hoping all reporters wouldn't ask him about. Oops.
To say that the President of the United States over the weekend released a video of him pooping on the American people.
The President uses social media to make a point. He is using satire to make a point.
Oh, so that's what we're calling Hair Farce One's 3 a.m. old mantrums now. Because if you ask me, it kind of looks like the old sack of oranges doth protest too much. And while we're on the subject of lackeys doing the king's bidding, how's that swearing in of that new rep from Arizona going?
Late today, State Attorney General sued the Speaker of the House over his refusal to swear in a duly elected member of Congress. And in that lawsuit, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays did not mince words at all.
And I quote, in this lawsuit, Speaker Johnson has not identified any valid reason for refusing to promptly seat Ms. Grijalva. Instead, on information and belief, Speaker Johnson wishes to delay seating Ms. Grijalva to prevent her from signing a discharge position that would force a vote on the release of the Epstein files.
Look, we'll schedule it, I guess, as soon as she wants. It has nothing to do with...
As soon as the Democrats open a vote to reopen the government.
She deserves to have all the pop and circumstance that everybody else does. Have her family and friends in the balcony.
But, so if she flies in her family, would you guys do it?
All of us, she'll get the full bells and whistles. It hasn't
you understand
been scheduled
how this works,
because
right?
We don't schedule things for pro forma. Bless her heart, she's a representative-elect. She doesn't know how it works around here.
Adelita Grijalva from the great state of Arizona. She accompanied me to the floor. I tried to get recognition. There was no other business today because I wanted to move a unanimous consent motion that the Speaker of the House be directed to move on the next legislative day tomorrow to swear in Ms. Grijalva. And yet he turned away. He pretended he didn't notice me and he scurried out of the room.
Instead of doing TikTok videos, she should be serving her constituents.
The Congresswoman-elect right now can't lease a new building. She can't change that voicemail. She can't really do anything in an official capacity, which means she's limited in how she can serve the people who helped put her in office.
I think it's patently absurd. We run the House. She has no jurisdiction. We're following the precedent. She's looking for national publicity. Apparently she's gotten some of it. But good luck with that.
Aw, come on now, Mikey. Don't get your what would Jesus do underoos all in a bunch. You've been refusing to swear in Adelita for a month now, coming up with all sorts of bullshit reasons why. So now the Arizona AG wants a court to decide if it's okay for a federal judge to do your job. Because we all know you're just going to come up with another stupid made-up reason for why you're refusing to swear in Adelita. Something like this.
When are you going to swear in Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva?
As soon as we get back to legislative session, when Chuck Schumer allows us to turn the lights back on.
Why haven't you done it already?
Because this is the way the institution works. I'm following the Pelosi precedent, by the way, when my dear friend from Louisiana, Julia Letlow, was elected to fill the seat of her deceased husband because of COVID. Nancy Pelosi took 25 days to swear her in.
Are you saying that Nancy Pelosi refused to swear her in earlier?
No, I'm saying that's my very point is this is the normal
process. My understanding is that was the date that actually the representative-elect Letlow at the time requested.
Okay, so that much bullshit coming out of that little man's mouth is deplorable, but also impressive. First off, there isn't a Pelosi rule when it comes to swearing in duly elected congressional representatives for the Congress or the House. Just like there wasn't a Biden rule when Turtle McConnell refused to swear in Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court back in 2016. And secondly, it's not like everyone doesn't know why Micro Johnson is flaccidly bending over backwards to make sure that no one finds out that
Trump is on the Epstein list. Yes, he is. Trump is on the Epstein list. Yes, he is. They can shred the docs, but the truth still exists. Trump is on the Epstein list. Yes, he is.
Damn, that song is a banger. Can't wait till they release the files. But I digress. We were talking about things that look like a monarchy, but according to the broke-ass billionaire occupying what's left of the White House, we should all just relax.
It won't interfere with the current building. It won't be. It'll be near it, but not touching it.
Several months later,
President Trump's expanding plans to architecturally transform the White House,
which we learned today includes the complete destruction of the East Wing.
Work crews making room for President Trump's $250 million ballroom.
Parts of the East Wing are being torn down to make room for the president's personal project, a 90,000 square foot ballroom.
Backhoe ripping through the structure. Sounds of construction could be heard across the White House campus.
President Trump says the ballroom construction will cost $300 million. That's up $100 million from his original estimate, all paid for by private donors. Senior administration officials say it was always the plan to modernize the East Wing, and demolishing it completely makes the most sense.
It's about $300 million. It's set to do many, many things. We determined that really knocking it down, and rather than allowing that to hurt a very expensive, beautiful building that the ballroom, I think there'll be nothing like it. And it's being paid for 100% by me and some friends of mine, donors.
This is a building that belongs to all of us as people. This is part of our heritage. This is part of our story as Americans. And we deserve to have that conversation about its fate and what happens to it.
Yeah, we should, but we're not in a normal timeline. If we were, we might have had that opportunity. But 77-plus poorly educated asshole decided that the Trump regime needed a second chance to get the whole Nazi Germany reboot going, And as a consequence, the incontinent autocrat installed his lackey over at the National Capital Planning Commission, who recently declared the NCPC only oversees new construction at the White House. Demolition is apparently out of their wheelhouse. Which is so convenient, since King Baby Coward started tearing down the East Wing of the White House without getting permission first. You know, like Presidents Roosevelt and Truman and even Nixon did when they wanted to make renovations to existing structures. Unlike the complete destruction of a building that made it through two world wars before the Lardfather decided he was going to have a ballroom three times bigger than Hitler's and decorated just like Putin puked all over it. Which is bad enough, but then Propaganda Barbie had to go and remove all doubt as to what the fuck is actually happening to the White House.
The White House has explained that the reason you didn't submit construction plans to the NCPC is because that commission, along with others, don't have oversight over demolitions, but only over construction. And so far, you haven't built anything. So can you help us understand, can the president tear down anything he wants without oversight? Could he demolish this building or, say, the Jefferson Memorial?
So it's not the president who came up with that legal opinion himself. That's a legal opinion that's been held by the NCPC for many years. Consistently, their general counsel has said when it comes to phase one of this project, the tearing down of the current East Wing structure, a submission is not required legally for that. Only for vertical construction will a submission be required. And
so it sounds like the answer is yes, he can tear down whatever he wants.
Oh, and that, folks, at least for me, is depressing. I gotta say, I was upset watching the videos and seeing the pictures of the East Wing demolition Donnycon tried very hard not to make public at first. Our country is only a couple of centuries old, and we don't really have really fucking old monuments like other countries do. We've got the White House, the Liberty Bell, Independence Hall, that whole city of Williamsburg, and a few more places, but really that's it. And now the house that belongs to all of us is being altered without the consent of all of us.
That was rude. That was pretty fucking rude.
And now we're all supposed to just shut up about Schittler building his own gaudy display of impotence because he got the money from his friends? Like the dawn of eternal stench has friends. I mean, even his mail order wife doesn't reside on the same floor as he does. So now a part of the White House belongs to rich fuckers who can...
Someday, and that day may never come, I'll call upon you to do a service for me.
I'm talking about douchebags like Joffrey Bezos, Peter Thiel, T-fucking Mobile, Microsoft, a Chinese company that makes microchips, and a maggot who invested in TikTok. And that's just a few of them. We're talking about defense contractors, crypto bros. They're all paying to play, ensuring that they have access to the executive branch of our government for the foreseeable future. And for those of you in the back, we're not just talking about Carnegie Hall or the Smithsonian. This is a whole ass wing of the fucking White House that this guy just pimped out to his rich bitches for a ballroom bigger than the Mustache Man's.
Unacceptable! Unacceptable! Uh-huh. Unacceptable!
What? What's going on?
Fuck yeah, it is. Especially when none of this makes any fucking sense. Unless you consider the obvious fact that
this guy doesn't plan on leaving. As the government is shut down, he's still building this bootleg party room, as I like to call it, in the White House that nobody asked for. That's the only thing that's not shut down. The house is shut down. We're not going back in. We're not doing any work for the American people. And his ballroom is still being constructed. Now, who would construct a ballroom that's going to take, I don't know how long, that's going to take, I don't know how many dollars, if they plan on leaving in 3 years. He's not planning on leaving. It's not a joke when he puts a Trump 2028 hat on the desk in the Oval as he's supposed to be having a real meeting with the leadership within the House and the Senate about how we are going to work for the American people. We should all be very concerned.
I know I am. Fuck, I was concerned when Chunky Milk announced a sequel after he was convicted of 34 counts of fraud, about to be charged with federal time for hiding classified documents in the shitter at his retirement home in Florida. And let's not forget unleashing Meal Team 6 on the Capitol to stop the certification of the election he fucking lost. But now that he's replaced the Rose Garden with some tacky Mar-a-Lago crap and tearing down buildings, it should all be crystal clear. This over-bronzed gourd has no plans on leaving the White House ever, because
this is the bad place.
And you know how I know that? Because the greasiest beer belly to ever wear 3 t-shirts and a flannel to every event and former Drumpf chief of staff said this to reporters with a straight fucking face.
So Trump 28, Trump is going to be president in 28, and people just ought to get accommodated with that.
So what about the 22nd Amendment?
There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan, and President Trump will be the president in 28. And President Trump will be the president of the United States, and the country needs him to be president of the United States. We have to finish what we started. And the way we finish it through Trump is a vehicle. I know this will drive you guys crazy, but he's a vehicle of divine providence. He's an instrument.
More like a very old, swollen tool that you guys keep propping up while you pave over this country to put up a dictatorship. For example, old MacDonald's announcement he's seeking compensation from the federal government for his fragile ego.
President Trump demanding that the Justice Department pay him close to $230 million to make up for the federal investigations into him. That's according to the New York Times. $230 million, that's more than twice the estimated value of the stolen jewels from the Louvre.
He is demanding $230 million because he faced special counsel investigations over his campaign's contacts with Russia and his removal of classified documents from the White House to his home in Mar-a-Lago.
It's interesting because I'm the one that makes a decision, right? And, you know, that decision would have to go across my desk. And it's awfully strange to make a decision where I'm paying myself. In other words, did you ever have one of those cases where you have to decide how much you're paying yourself in damages?
The Justice Department officials who would likely sign off on the payment were once President Trump's own personal lawyers, Attorney General Pam Bondi and her deputy Todd Blanche.
Of course, pick me Bondi and that white guy trying to get Ghislaine Maxwell pardoned would be the ones granting Payless Putin $230 million taxpayer dollars. For what, you might ask? Why, it's payback for all the pain and suffering Rumpel Thinskin has had to endure after we all found out that this 10-piece bucket was shitting amongst our government's most secret secrets and made fun of him, including myself, all over the internet and this podcast in particular. And then there's always his shit-smearing coup attempt that failed on January 6th.
What a maroon. What an ignoramus.
And speaking of stupid things wannabe kings do, the Schmuckretary of Agriculture made an announcement that pissed off a lot of drum swallowers that also happened to be cattle ranchers.
What about beef from Argentina? Is that a possibility?
Right now, in America, we consume about 12 million metric tons of beef. 10 million of that we produce here in America, but the 2 million I'm talking about, we've been offshoring. Here's the other thing that's so exciting for our beef industry is that Bobby Kennedy and my partnership with Making America Healthy Again, a lot of that is going to be moving around the new dietary guidelines around a return to saturated fats. We've got to make sure we've got the production to be able to align with that. So yes, the president has said he's in discussions with Argentina. Argentina is also facing a foot and mouth disease issue.
that we're going to do something very quickly and easily on beef to get it down. The ranchers understand that. They're so happy for what I've done. I saved them. I don't think you'd have any beef in this country if I didn't do that. So we're very proud of that. Yeah, Brian.
One day later.
Many American cattle ranchers outraged right now and raising some concerns about a plan by President Trump to import Argentinian beef into America to help lower the prices. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association, along with other farming groups, say that importing beef would only hurt American farmers, that it wouldn't change the prices all that much.
We need to reduce imports. We need to grow our herd. We need to grow domestic beef in this country. I think we should not be looking for new markets to bring beef in here.
I know very few farmers and ranchers who actually support tariffs.
And I'm pretty sure there's a shit ton of people who don't want to deal with foot and mouth disease because they ordered a burger or a steak anywhere in America, especially when Republicans are trying to knock all of them off of their health insurance to offset billionaire tax cuts. And when I say them, I mean mostly maggots.
Who are the ACA marketplace enrollees? Look at this. The plurality are actually Republicans. Republicans are more likely to use the marketplace than Democrats are at 45%. Democrats at 35%. Then you get independents at 20%. Republicans are more likely, in fact, to be the enrollees in the marketplace than Democrats are. And the majority of the enrollees, 57%, are in Republican-held congressional districts.
Oh, damn. It is your own dudes cutting your health care right before you're getting hand, foot, and mouth disease from all that Argentinian beef you'll be eating soon, or already have been, depending on who you talk to. It's hard to tell, since the brainworm running the Department of Heroin and Human Atrocities fired all the people making sure our beef isn't infected. And right after Trader Don tariffed American soybean farmers into bankruptcy, what with their big customer, China, leaving them for Argentina, because their soybeans are cheaper than the Americans. Oh, and just to add, get off my lawn to the mix. In case you ever doubted whether or not Von Schützenpants makes trade decisions based on his fragile self-esteem,
it's a cross-border fight between the United States and Canada over the words and legacy of Ronald Reagan today.
Trump has ended trade talks with Canada over an ad criticizing tariffs. But last week, the guy in charge of Ontario shared an anti-tariff ad featuring audio from a speech by former President Ronald Reagan.
High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs.
The president posted on Truth Social this morning, Canada took a big buy ad saying that Ronald Reagan did not like tariffs when actually he loved tariffs for our country.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford responded to the president in a social media post of his own saying, Canada and the United States are friends, neighbors, and allies. President Ronald Reagan knew that we are stronger together. God bless Canada and God bless the United States.
The importance of distinguishing things we can control and things we can't control. We can't control the trade policy of the United States. We recognize that that policy has fundamentally changed. And what we can also control, or at least heavily influence, is developing new partnerships and opportunities, including with the economic giants of Asia, which is the focus of this trip.
The White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett asked about the president's announcement and said he thinks that the president has been frustrated for some time about lack of progress with Canadian trade negotiations and that maybe it's good to take a break.
You think? And in the adult world of you can't unpost this, sounds to me like American businesses in general just took a big one to the jaw now that Canada is looking for new international friends. Not that I blame Canada, when the fact is that speech was not fake and it was not AI. Ronald Reagan really did give that speech in 1987 as part of a radio broadcast. And for those of you way in the back, I'm going to play what Ronnie said in its entirety so you can hear just how much Reagan, in fact, did not like tariffs.
You see, at first, when someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. What eventually occurs is, first, homegrown industries start relying on government protection in the form of high tariffs. They stop competing and stop making the innovative management and technological changes they need to succeed in world markets. And then, while all this is going on, something even worse occurs. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. The result is more and more tariffs, higher and higher trade barriers, and less competition. So soon, because of the prices made artificially high by tariffs that subsidize inefficiency and poor management, people stop buying. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. The memory of all this occurring back in the 30s made me determined when I came to Washington to spare the American people the protectionist legislation that destroys prosperity.
Damn, Reagan really did not like tariffs, and for good reason. See, Ronald was born in the long ago time of 1911, which means he was the ripe old age of 17, working age, by the way, when the billionaires collapsed our economy in 1929. And he was 18 fucking years old when the Republicans of the time decided to tariff their way out of the Great Depression, leading to an even more depressing depression that lasted for 11 more fucking years. Or as Ferris Bueller's history teacher explained,
in 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the, anyone, the Great Depression, passed the, anyone, a tariff bill, the Hawley-Smoot Tariff Act, which, anyone, raised tariffs in an effort to collect more revenue for the federal government. Did it work? Anyone know the effects? It did not work, and the United States sank deeper into the Great Depression.
And sink this country did. In historical fact, it wasn't until 1941 that the United States finally clawed its way out of the economic bullshit Republican tariffs did to this country, mostly because of what was going on in 1941. You know, the whole money-making machine we call World War II. And speaking of the spoils of war, Special Envoy to the Middle East, Witkoff, and Ivanka Trump's Kushner doll sat down with 60 Minutes to discuss some of the new renovations planned for Gaza now that Israel has killed 30% of the residents and relocated hundreds of thousands more. Now, the plan for this interview was to keep things light. Ren was prepared to talk about new developments in Israel's resettlement program into the newly destroyed Gaza, but Stimpy, he had other plans to discuss, more specifically, master plans.
From the 60 Minutes interview with Kushner and Witkoff, Witkoff talks about how they've been developing this quote-unquote master plan for 2 years. And Jared Kushner gets a very uncomfortable look on his face when Witkoff uses that language.
Part of the plan is the reconstruction, the building, rebuilding of Gaza. Tell us more about the plan and how much it's going to cost. Where's the money going to come from? And who's going to award the contracts?
I think it's going to cost a lot of money.
What's a lot of money?
The estimates are in the $50 billion range. It might be a little bit less. It might be a little bit more.
So the Middle East countries are going to provide the money.
You'll see European participation and so forth. But it's the master plan. And we're working with a group of people who have been working on master plans for the last 2 years.
So there are plans already.
Yeah. We have plans already. We have a master plan already. And by the way, and Jared's been pushing this, and we're working together on it. And I think if the world saw the progress so far, they'd be pretty impressed.
Oh, my good sir, we are pretty impressed with the fact that you're still alive after saying the genocide for real estate part out loud. Now, as far as your dear leader getting involved in another country's systematic murder of the current residents so they can take over the land and make millions or even billions of dollars doing it, that's despicable. But right on brand, I gotta say. And I'm not surprised by that. Oh, and as far as the 2-year master plan for Gaza, here at This Week Again, we brought to you this plan several years ago, warned right after October 7th's attack and disproportionate retaliation that is still retaliating 24 months later, that it is the plan all along to clear Gaza out for the rich people, to make a new hotspot along with an Israeli port of commerce that is supposed to rival the Suez Canal. Roll tape.
A stunning proposal from an American president, Donald Trump, with the Israeli prime minister by his side, declaring that the U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip.
To have America control Gaza.
And redevelop it into something like a seaside resort.
Donald Trump calling for the permanent resettlement of roughly 2 million Palestinians. And he says he's willing to use the U.S. military to do it.
That on its face would both violate international law and be seen by millions as the U.S. backing explicit ethnic cleansing.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, will own it, and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site. Level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. We have an opportunity to do something that could be phenomenal. And I don't want to be cute, I don't want to be a wise guy, but the Riviera of the Middle East.
So whether it's building a new Trump Tower on top of the rubble that once was the Gaza Strip and the Palestinian people, or tearing down American history to put up a ballroom even Hitler would envy, there's one thing that's for sure. None of this is America first. And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. You can follow me, Suzanne Posel, or this show This Week Again on social media platforms such as Blue Sky, Threads, Insta, Facebook. And we are always available for your listening pleasure on places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Ta-da for now.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
These are difficult times, and if you believe in justice, progress, and democracy, the news you read and listen to can be pretty depressing. And that's why there's a new podcast called Good News for Lefties and America. Every day it features positive news stories for progressive listeners, because no matter how disturbing the headlines might be, there's always hope we can build on for a better tomorrow. Good News for Lefties and America. Listen on this platform at goodnewsforlefties.com or wherever podcasts are heard.